Call the House Judiciary Committee to order, March 31st, 2011, and open a public hearing on House Bill 3025. Staff?
And co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 3025 would modify ORS 8.660. This is the bill which gives to the district attorney jurisdiction over all public offenses committed within the district attorney's county. It would make explicit that a district attorney is permitted to take control of a misdemeanor investigation and prosecution committed in the county served by that district attorney. This would allow them to take control of those cases from municipal and justice courts which currently have concurrent jurisdiction.
Okay. You want to have to come up first. Is Debbie Boone here? There she is.
Yeah.
Debbie.
Good afternoon, co-chairs. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, the beautiful upper left coast. And I'm here before you today introducing House Bill 3025 at the request of my district attorney in Clatsop County. And I'm assuming he's in the room. Can he come up here then?
Yeah.
Okay. And I think he has a packet of information for you all on that, and I think it goes to her.
It's been given to everybody.
On this bill, and I am going to defer to him because he's the expert in this, and I am not an attorney. The second time this week I've had to declare that I'm not an attorney, and probably not likely to ever be one, so... So
you're believable.
We have also a contingent of people, elected officials and city people from just next to my district house, District 31, which includes the city of Astoria, and they're here to testify on this bill also. But I have my district attorney, Josh Marquis, here, and I will turn things over to him.
Thank you very much, Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, members of the committee. Thank you very much for taking time. I know you have a very full plate, so I'll try to be brief, but also to answer any questions you have. As a trial lawyer, I always prefer to be batting third base, but I understand that I'm sort of the proponent of the bill, so. And I haven't had a chance to review the materials that I think the people from the city of Astoria have submitted, so if you have questions about that, I'd be happy to answer them at some point. I've been the district attorney for 18 years in Clatsop County. I was just reelected to my fifth term in May. And before that, I was a chief deputy DA in Bend and in Newport, and before that in Lane County. My name is Joshua Marquis. I'm the district attorney of Clatsop County.
I think you said it twice.
Okay, now I've said it twice. I mentioned the other DA's offices I worked in because I want to indicate that I haven't just worked in one county. I've worked in several, and I've special prosecuted at the request of other prosecutors in probably 12 or 15. So I have some idea about what goes on around the state. I also have been Oregon's representative to the National District Attorneys Association for over 12 years, so I also have some idea of what goes on in other states, although it's probably not particularly germane to what's going on. I want to make clear that Senate Bill 3025 is essentially a clarification to existing law, and the packet is relatively brief. On the top is a formal letter opinion from Mary Williams, the Chief Deputy Attorney General, about 8.660, which is the next page right underneath it. That is the current law, which essentially says that the district attorney is the chief law officer of the county, the primary prosecutor, and ultimately makes the decisions about all prosecutions of all crimes, as distinguished from violations. Municipal courts have very, very important roles in our justice system, primarily handling infractions. And in fact, it's a large revenue source for a lot of cities. And I want to be very clear, 3025 in no way impedes on that function of the municipal courts. Many municipal courts do not do crimes at all. And the reason for that is crimes tend to be kind of expensive. As you know, you have to have a prosecutor, You have to have a, city has to provide a public defender. If you have to rent jail space, if you hire, you pay for a jury, etc. So most municipal courts don't. Municipal courts are different, however, than circuit court. Municipal courts are not courts of, are not required to be courts of record. A few are, most are not. And a court of record doesn't simply mean you turn a tape recorder on. It means you can rely on the records. So the next piece of paper down below that is ORS 221. Since all 3025 does is basically says, notwithstanding ORS 221, the district attorney shall have the primary authority. 221 sets out what the authority of the city attorney is. Now, the vast majority of municipal courts in Oregon, I think, do a fine job, and including on DUIIs. I mean, the question that I'll try to anticipate a couple questions, well, why are you bringing this if you're just a problem in a couple places? Now, I'm not the only witness here today. You're going to hear deputy DAs from Hood River, from Clackamas County, from the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUII, which has taken a position on this bill and will testify, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, and perhaps others. One of the issues is that elected district attorneys are that. We're elected, we're accountable. We can be voted out of office. A couple of us were the last election. And we're subject, for example, to our county commission telling us whether they think we've gone overboard by cutting back on our budgets. City prosecutors are, without exception, not elected. Municipal court judges, almost none of them are. Municipal court judges are not even subject to the code of judicial fitness. And that's because of a case that actually comes out of Astoria where the Supreme Court said, nope, when the Judicial Fitness Commission attempted to take action against the municipal court judge in Astoria, you don't have any authority because he's not subject to that. So in most places, and it varies slightly, the municipal judge and the municipal prosecutor are both hired by usually the city council. And the city council often makes the point, my city council, which will do a fine job of speaking for themselves, I'm sure, that they don't want to get involved in the day-to-day business. They're not lawyers. They leave it up to the judge and prosecutor. There is a problem in Astoria with the UII cases. And the other materials that I've submitted are a series or a couple of the many editorials that have run in the Daily Astorian. Three letters recently received, one from a retired Astoria police officer in favor of this bill, another from a local attorney. These are all unsolicited, by the way. And another, a very moving letter from a woman whose mother was charged in municipal court with reckless driving. And basically, I won't read the letter. She says, I hear you're trying to get this case out of municipal court. Please do this, because I don't think that my mother will get the help she needs. We've tried everything. And I asked the municipal court to give me the case because she actually got arrested twice in one night, once at 9 o'clock in the city and once at midnight in the county. Charged the case together, filed it, wrote a letter to the city attorney, said, please let me handle both of them. He immediately got a no, not going to let you do it. 2 months later, she overdosed and died. The only person she hurt was her and her family. But I prosecute DUI cases personally, not a lot of them, but over the course of my career, I've probably prosecuted over 200 of them. I prosecute too many vehicular manslaughter cases. They happen too. That's pretty much what the packet is. I know that you're busy, and I want to make clear that this bill will not require anyone to do anything. It gives the district attorney the authority to do what we believe the law does. Now, let me anticipate a question. Well, if it gives you the authority and you have this letter from the attorney general, what are you doing bothering us with clarifying statute? Well, the mayor and the entire city council of Astoria are seated back there, and perhaps they can tell you. I got this informal opinion from the attorney general about 5 months ago, and I've conveyed that in that form informally to the city. And then when I got the opinion on the 28th in writing, I furnished it to Mr. Henningsgaard, who's the city attorney, used to be a city councilman. He's here today. I think he'll testify. And I don't know, but my impression is that it doesn't change their opinion. Again, I won't try to characterize. I believe they believe they do a fine job of it, and there's no need for it. I would, I guess, question, where are all the other cities in Oregon that have a problem with this? The answer is the vast majority do not. This is something that clarifies the law It gives the district attorney the opportunity to step in. In most places, they will not. In Salem and Eugene, I know there's representatives from both places here. The DA's offices are overwhelmed, and they rely on the DA, the municipal courts of Salem, Eugene, and Springfield, all of which do operate robust municipal courts. I have five municipal courts in my county. Four of them, this is not an issue. They send the DUIs to me. Now, DUIs happen to be the issue for me. In other counties, I think it may be other issues. And again, I want to stress the vast majority of the municipal courts, and I'm also not, I want to make clear, I'm not saying that every single DUI that goes through the Astoria Municipal Court is bungled. That's not the case. But enough of them, and the only reason I know about this is the Astoria Police Department has come to me over and over again over the years saying, you got to do something about this. And so finally, a year ago, I started engaging the city in a dialogue, and frankly, it's sort of hit a wall. And that's one of the reasons I asked, after getting the approval of the Oregon District Attorneys Association, to make sure that this wasn't just a narrow issue that just affected one county, because again, I wouldn't expect you to seriously consider legislation to fix a problem in a particular place. So, with that, knowing that your time is valuable, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Committee members?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Josh, I'm just trying to get my hands around this a little bit and understand where you're going. And I want to talk about the accountability issue again. I understand you being an elected official, the accountability mechanism for you. I mean, obviously, every 4 years, if you're still doing a good job, you get voted in. If not, then adios, goodbye. What's the mechanism for the city attorney?
Well, in Astoria, and I think most of the cities in Clatsop County, it's simply a contract position. It's not a full-time job. I don't know if it's a full-time job anywhere, but maybe in some of the bigger cities. It's hired by the council and serves at the pleasure of the council. Sometimes there are specific contracts. As you point out, Representative Olson, the district attorney, is elected, and if people really get ticked at the DA, and that we can also be recalled. It's happened more than once. My predecessor was, for example. There is no mechanism for a municipal court judge or prosecutor to be removed, except by the council.
Okay, thank you.
And I want to be sure I understand clearly. So you said the municipal court judge does not come under the purview of the Supreme Court as far as judicial fitness. A municipal judge does not come under.
Correct. That is the Supreme Court's ruling.
Okay, thank you.
Further committee?
Thank you very much.
Scott Healy, Carrie Rasmussen, and Jody Van Sham, is it? You can start in any order. Just state your name before you start testifying, please.
I want to go first. Chairman Krieger, Chairman Barker, members of the committee, my name is Scott Healy, and I'm a senior deputy district attorney in Clackamas County. And I testified earlier in front of this committee. I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you guys hear a lot of testimony, though, probably about a month ago or 3 weeks ago. Anyway, I'm currently the deputy DA who's in charge of our misdemeanor unit there in Clackamas County. I've worked in Clackamas County for about 17 and a half years and virtually prosecuted every type of crime from DUI clear through to aggravated murder. And I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 3025. I'm also here to testify for the Clackamas County DA's office and also the Oregon District Attorneys Association. And we believe that this amendment to ORS 8.660 is a very good idea to clear up any possible question resulting from any litigation that might occur, to show that ultimately the authority to prosecute crimes in any given jurisdiction in our state is up to the district attorney, who is, as you know, the top law enforcement officer in every county in the state. There are a number of reasons that this is a good idea, and it promotes uniformity and consistent due process and fairness throughout the entire process. We have problems with uniformity and or I guess, fairness, because sometimes the municipal courts don't always, you know, treat similar crimes the same. Arguably, this is a constitutional issue. If the executive branch of government is not uniform in how it treats similarly situated individuals in society when they commit the, or arguably commit the same offense, then we actually have defense attorneys go to municipalities sometimes, or even justice of the peace courts, and argue that, you know, they're not being treated the same as maybe they are at the county level. In fact, we have an issue with regard to breast test refusal citations in Clackamas County right now, where we may have to litigate that issue. And sometimes the DA's office is just simply, because of resources, we're better equipped and prepared to handle these certain types of crimes. And I would say the most important Class A misdemeanor crimes that there's concurrent jurisdiction with, obviously both in the county and at the municipal court level, would be driving under the influence of intoxicants, domestic assault cases, maybe sex abuse 3 is a Class A misdemeanor, in public indecency and private indecency are Class A misdemeanors. And these are obviously crimes that are very important to the community because of the public safety issues that they create. And I heard Josh Marquis talk about some of those issues. Because of limited budgets, oftentimes city prosecutors only work part-time, and that's understandable. There are lawyers that have a full practice going on outside of the fact that they might be the city prosecutor for any given municipality. And so they don't have the same amount of time to devote to these important cases. I just wanted to give you a couple of examples of issues that have happened in Clackamas County. We found out, that is, my office found out about really an arson in the first degree case, which would be a Class A felony, once we sort of found out what the facts were, when it was there was a plea to reckless burning in a municipality in our jurisdiction, and we found out about it from the media report. And then we were wondering how come, you know, this case was prosecuted as a Class A misdemeanor reckless burning when we were hearing the facts in the media, realizing that really it was probably an arson 1, maybe, you know, at the very least an arson 2, which is a Class C felony. Certainly we looked into that and talked to that particular city prosecutor. I believe I didn't personally do that, and just wanted to make sure that certainly all potential felonies would come to our office for review. Then domestic violence cases, as you may know, assault in the fourth degree can either be charged as a Class C felony or it can be charged as a Class A misdemeanor. If children were to witness the incident, it could be a Class C felony, or if the perpetrator has previously been convicted of assaulting the same victim, it could be a Class C felony. Most of the others are Class A misdemeanors. As you also know, these types of crimes, domestic violence cases that I'm talking about, you know, you have to devote, even if they're A misdemeanors, you devote a lot of time to prosecuting these cases. Our deputy DAs have special training with regard to those cases. We have a lot more resources from the victim's advocate's perspective, and we also want to make sure that the sentences are appropriate in terms of resources and getting the perpetrator, if convicted, the appropriate treatment, so as to make sure that this doesn't happen again, hopefully, in the community. So, in total, we're really not talking probably about a lot of cases. One thing I did want to mention, too, with regard to domestic violence cases, is that in our county some time ago, and I think this was 3 or 4 years ago, it came to our attention that maybe the domestic violence cases in our county in the municipalities where they were being handled were not being handled completely. Not that they weren't being handled appropriately, but maybe the approach wasn't uniform and they weren't being handled as well as they could be being handled. So our office had one of our domestic violence deputies go and talk to all the municipalities, and they ultimately agreed to provide them all to our office. So there is uniformity now, and we're able to use our specially trained deputies and resources to address that serious problem in our county. But there were some municipalities that did initially kind of push back on that, but we were able to come to an agreement. So those would just be, you know, a couple of situations where it occurred in our county. So in total, I really don't believe that you would be talking about a lot of cases overall. To give you an example, our misdemeanor unit does between 6,000 and 7,000 cases a year, and you know, we have budget constraints just like everybody else does. So we would use our discretion, just like we did with the domestic violence cases, in deciding, you know, whether or not we really want to go and take a large number of cases from these municipalities. But certainly if we think that there might be an issue or might be a problem, we believe that the chief law enforcement officer and ORS 8.660 clearly states that, you know, the discretion lies with the district attorney's office. And it also, as I mentioned before, ensures fairness and safety in our community. Thank you.
My name is Jody Vaughn. I represent the Governor's Advisory Board, Committee on DUII. I'm a member of that committee. I formerly worked as a prosecutor for 23 years, and I spent about 15 of those years training law enforcement and prosecutors on how to handle DUII cases, and that would include the drug evaluation cases, which are more complex. What I want to share with the committee and what the concern of the GAC is that this is not a situation that's isolated in Astoria. Throughout the time that I provided training to police officers, I would often get a call from them that said, I talked to the city attorney, they tell me that what you suggest that we do is not correct, you can't do that. And I'd have to call the municipal lawyer up and explain to them why the law would allow them to do that. And this is not because they're not good lawyers. It's because they have other demands, they have other priorities, and DUIs have become increasingly complex over the last decade. I think these are one of the most difficult misdemeanor cases to handle, and then unless you're a specialist in it and stay current on the law that comes out every week, you're going to lose your footing quite quickly. As you know, the concern that the Governor's Advisory Committee has is that intoxicated drivers are held accountable. In order to do that, you need to understand complex things such as chemistry, toxicology, dissipation rates, breath testing equipment, and work with experts who are highly qualified in that field. And we just don't think that necessarily happens in municipal courts. We are pleased to see that the District Attorney of Clatsop County is concerned about DUII prosecution and to make sure people are held accountable, and we'd ask that you pass this bill.
Chairman Barker, Chairman Krieger, members of the committee, my name is Carrie Rasmussen. I'm a Deputy District Attorney from Hood River, Oregon. I've been prosecuting in Oregon for 11 years. I've also worked in Marion County and Linn County as a deputy district attorney. Most relevant for you folks today is my experience as the city prosecutor, a full-time position in 2004 and 2005 in St. Helens, that's Columbia County. And during that year plus, I was the full-time city prosecutor in a court that was not a court of record. So the judge was the town printer. And in order for a court to be a court of record, Mr. Marquis was correct, you need to have some form of recording equipment, but you also have to have a judge who is an attorney. So those two requirements are needed to be a court of record. And so during that year, it was very frustrating because, as many of you probably know, the review of any conviction in a municipal court is de novo review in the circuit court. And so what that meant effectively is that every time that I had a trial in city court, that even if I won the trial, a jury trial, he could go right across the street to circuit court and have a brand new trial. So anytime any defendant was cited into municipal court, they got two bites at the apple, two trials. Now, that certainly speaks to a lack of uniformity, unfairness. Another problem, I believe, with having municipal courts that are not courts of record is that when you obtain convictions, whether by a guilty plea or a trial, oftentimes there's not adequate record keeping or a method of getting that conviction into what's called LEDS. It's the law enforcement data system in our state. Fingerprint cards aren't sent in, and that creates a statewide problem, and that's why I think House Bill 3025 really addresses not just a local problem, but a statewide problem for frankly, all deputy district attorneys, because especially for crimes of domestic violence, but also for driving under the influence, we need to have proof of predicate convictions. In other words, a prior conviction for assault in the fourth degree against the same victim. If you have proof of that conviction, the next time that person assaults the same victim, it's a felony. But you must have proof of that prior conviction. The first hurdle is getting notice that there is even that prior conviction. So if notice is not getting adequately into the LEDS law enforcement data system, we don't have an adequate way to find out about that prior conviction. So many folks will be arrested and charged with assault in the fourth degree, and at the county level, the circuit court level, they may be charged with a misdemeanor again. Perhaps, most egregiously, they could be up for a domestic violence diversion because the deputy district attorney never knew about their prior conviction in municipal court. And that holds true for driving under the influence crimes as well, because you need predicate driving under the influence convictions before it adds up to the felony. So as you can see in both of these scenarios, somebody may be faced with either prison for a felony domestic violence crime or a felony driving under the influence crime, or probation or a diversion if we don't have adequate notice. So adequate notice is also important. The second bite at the apple is also important. As far as unfairness and getting a second trial in circuit court. And what we have been concerned with in Hood River County up until recently, because our municipal court, because of budget reasons, actually disbanded, and now all of the crimes by default come to the district attorney's office except for traffic violations. What was concerning to us is that for a period of time, and this is just one example of disparate treatment, folks were having to pay several hundred dollars more simply to apply for a Dewey diversion in municipal court than the circuit court. So in the same community, a defendant would have to pay a much higher cost in municipal court than in circuit court for the same benefit. And so, my boss isn't usually in the position to worry about necessarily the undue hardships of defendants, but certainly that was an example of, we believe, the municipal court treating people differently for monetary reasons. And for all of those examples, I am here today to speak to you in support of House Bill 3025 to address those concerns.
Any members, you got questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Olson.
Kerry, I guess what I'm interested in, since with your experience that you mentioned that you'd had as a prosecuting attorney as a with municipal court situation, how often did you experience that with the second bite of the apple as you're describing?
Probably once or twice a month, and I won't name the fellow's name, but there was one attorney in particular in town who nearly every single time he had a defendant in municipal court. That was his practice, to basically have a practice trial with the municipal court. And what's particularly offensive about that is that it's a full-blown jury trial chosen from the same jury pool. Same verdict, same exact outcome. And so maybe once or twice a month. And the ongoing joke actually was the district attorney, Steve Atchison, who's still the district attorney there, half-jokingly said he should just deputize me to be a deputy district attorney, to just run literally across the street and conduct the same trial for the DA's office.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We have Doug Hackerode and Ann Pratt.
Good Good afternoon, Chair Barker and Co-Chair Krieger and members of the committee. My name is Ann Pratt. I'm a member of Mothers Against Drunk Driving. I'm also a member of Crime Victims United. Both are in full support of House Bill 3025. I am testifying on behalf of Mothers Against Drunk Driving. After 30 years of public outreach and education by MAD, there is absolutely no one who does not know that driving under the influence of alcohol or drugs can seriously injure or kill. Yet there are those who continue to ignore these facts. In 1980, Mothers Against Drunk Driving took to the streets of America and made cold, hard facts come to life, challenging a society that viewed drunk driving as acceptable. MAD stood its ground, helped introduce a mountain of life-saving traffic legislation, and saved many lives. The estimate is around 300,000. Alcohol-related fatalities have dropped since 1980 from 30,000 and nationally a year to around approximately the 11,000 that we have today, which is still far too many. I would like to quote Multnomah County Sheriff Dan Staten in an op-ed that he wrote in November of 2010. It was entitled, Driving Under the Influence, the Responsible Choice. The first responsibility lies with the offending driver. We as a community must accept the difficult truth when a person decides to get behind the wheel after consuming or using an impairing substance. That person is making a conscious and entirely selfish decision to endanger not only themselves, but all of us. DUI offenders are not necessarily evil or bad people, but make no mistake, they are criminal offenders. The defining characteristic DUI offenders share with other criminal offenders is the failure to make responsible choices. This failure on their part demands that the community hold them accountable. The second responsibility lies with law enforcement, the jails, the courts, and the treatment providers. MAD agrees with Sheriff Staten. MAD also agrees with Oregon law that all who are charged with DUI offenses should be prosecuted as charged rather than to be allowed to negotiate to a lesser offense, especially a non-alcohol related offense. Drunk driving is a crime, and continued incidents of such warrants the punitive effect of certain sanctions. Each DUI must be prosecuted, adjudicated, and accurately recorded in keeping with Oregon law, so that when a person accumulates multiple DUIs, they will be properly sanctioned, as in felony DUII. When there is sufficient question to the accuracy of the records in municipal courts, or failure to properly prosecute or adjudicate, or just in the best interest of public safety, the district attorney must have the ultimate authority to move DUI prosecutions to circuit court. Oregonians deserve to be safe on Oregon highways without the threat of fear of being struck or killed by intoxicated drivers. I would also like to add that there are a lot of muni courts who are doing a very good job, have hardworking prosecutors and good judges. They're dedicated to getting the intoxicated drivers off the road. Some of them in my county participate on the victim impact panel. But the law is not always followed in all muni courts. And it's not just Astoria, although I believe Astoria is an extreme example. In 2007, I testified on House Bill 3163. It was a bill to require muni courts become courts of record. The issue was the same back then. Muni courts were destroying valuable documents needed to prosecute felony DUI or lifetime DUI revocations, and some muni courts were just simply letting DUI offenders slip through the cracks by not prosecuting them at all. I met with a court administrator at the time from a muni court to confirm what I had heard. I wanted to hear it from them. I wanted to know what the procedure was. They said they kept some documents, destroyed the rest, placed it on film, at a point, and at the end of 10 years, destroyed the film. I also received quite a lot of feedback from those who work within the muni court system. Here are some comments from alcohol and drug evaluators who were brave enough to step up and answer my questions. One, since the law was passed that three DUIs and you are revoked for life, the judges don't convict on two DUIs when an offender comes in front of them. The judge collapses them into one. Another trick is to keep a first diversion and the second one on an arrest, the second conviction arrest. We have offenders coming into our office who have both quite frequently. Excuse me. Two, I'm just getting ready to see an offender who has had four DUIs, 89, 91, 04, and 07. He was given a one-year probation. C, one expressed concern regarding treatment, was very concerned about treatment. The police arrests, but that's where things go awry. The prosecutors don't prosecute, or if they do, then the judges don't do the things necessary to get the offender's attention. There are also offenders who have two DUIs in close sequence, and they plead one away so the offender doesn't have to lose his license for life. I think this is not only incredibly irresponsible, it's against the law. We are talking about the high-risk repeat offender. These repeat offenders pose a great threat, deadly threat to public safety. We can't allow this injustice to continue. Please clarify the statute, confirm the DA's authority, and pass House Bill 3025. MAD, CBU, and I personally support it. Thank you.
Doug, before you start, we have eight other people that want to testify. We have six or seven other bills, and many of the committees are limiting their testimony to 3 minutes. I don't want to do that. If you have written testimony, submit it, and then summarize, if you can, within 3 to 5 minutes. We'll get everybody to have their opportunity. Go ahead, Ben.
Chair Krieger, Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Harkelrode. I'm the retired Lane County District Attorney. I spent 24 years doing that, 10 years before that in the office as an Assistant District Attorney, and I currently represent the Oregon Anti-Crime Alliance, which supports House Bill 3025. Make no mistake about this bill. This bill is about power and control. Who is in power and who is in control? I always thought I was, as District Attorney in Lane County for 24 years, that I could take any case that I wanted to or that I thought deserved a good look in a circuit court, in a court of record. Now I understand that's in question. So why should we have any litigation about this later on if this bill is not passed? The answer is we should not. I recommend that you pass this bill, avoid that litigation, and give it to the district attorney, make it clear that the district attorney is in the power and control. That's all I have, and it's under 3 minutes.
Appreciate it. Mr. Hicks. Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Ms. Pratt, much of your testimony was concerning. It sounds like there's some plea bargaining going on of DUIs. It sounds like, could we talk about that? Because that's not allowed under the law, and so that's a very big problem. So,
Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, Representative Hicks, that was what this evaluator was indicating, that was happening. I did my research between 2006 and 2008, and these were direct comments that I received back from evaluators around the state. I can't cite who they were. I would get them in trouble, but they're direct comments. It is a problem.
Thank you. Mr. Chair. Doug, when you were a district attorney, did you ever reach down in Ms. Park to take a case? Were you ever denied by them? Do they ever say no?
Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, Representative Schaffler, and members of the committee, I did do that. I was never denied. I had a good working relationship with the municipal court prosecutors, all of them in Lane County. And once in a while, I would get a call from them. Actually, Senator Brzezinski called me one time and said, hey, would you take this case? It was a big mental element, and they weren't equipped to do that in Florence. I said, sure. But, no, I was never denied doing that. But I always thought that I could just tell them. You don't do that with working relationships, but had I been told, no, you can't take that sports athlete case, I might have said, yes, I can, and I will.
Any further questions? Thank you, panel.
Thank you.
Next call, Russ Mott, excuse me, and Peter Roscoe, looks like. I'm not sure if that's right. And go ahead and need your order, but please identify yourself for our recording machine.
Okay, Chair Baker, Chair Krieger, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. I'll keep it very short. My name is Russ War. I live in Astoria, Oregon. I'm a member of the Astoria City Council, and I would like to speak briefly in opposition to House Bill 3025. I hate to personalize this, but I have no idea how I can do it any other way and get our message across. About 10 years ago, long before I was on City Council, our editor of the Daily Astorian, with some help from Josh Markey, and started running articles and editorials inferring that the Astoria City Council had somehow hijacked the municipal court. We had a good old boy network, and we were using the court to do favors for our friends. That's really difficult to hide, but that's the inference. There were numerous articles saying that we should be strapped, the municipal court should be stripped of its ability to prosecute duties because we were somehow either dishonest, incompetent, or both. Since that started, we have had 10 different city council members. There are only 4 city councils in our community. We have a new city manager. We have a new city attorney. We have a new prosecutor in the municipal court. We have a new police chief. I think it's amazing that this culture of corruption can occur and endure through all of those changes, and that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm sorry, any questions? Okay, please go ahead.
Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, members of the committee, my name is Peter Roscoe. I'm also a city councilor with the City of Astoria, councilor for Ward 2. And I'm speaking in opposition to Bill 3025. A bit of background, I was a member of the Multnomah County DUI Advisory Board for almost 4 years in the early 90s. I've been in recovery for almost 28 years, June 13th, 1983.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I've spoken on the victims panel many, many times. I've brought the message of recovery to hospitals and prisons and a number of other places throughout Oregon and California many, many times. I have a deep personal conviction to recovery and sober living, and in no way condone the dangers of drunken driving and the tragedy that they bring to our community. But I'm opposed to this bill because I can see no real reason for it as it applies to the City of Astoria. We have repeatedly asked our district attorney to review the quality of justice in our city as opposed to the quality of justice in our circuit court. And what's been revealed is that there's an equal amount of success in both courts. The report that we asked for and was submitted to us in October was a lengthy report that was full of misstatements, misrepresentations, and out-and-out falsehoods. Rehashing mistakes in municipal court without is an exercise in futility if the same critical eye is not turned to the circuit court. And believe me when I can tell you that who can say the prosecution in any court has not erred, has not flubbed a case, has not somehow or another mishandled something along the way and had somebody that was accused walk away scot-free. The fact remains that our municipal court DUII convictions and our circuit court DUII convictions are on a par with each other. The one thing that you may hear is that there is a difference in dismissal rates between the two courts. But in order to understand that, you have to understand the way the system works. When an Astoria policeman gives a ticket to somebody, it's immediately filed as a case in municipal court. In the circuit court, that's not the way it works. The circuit court accepts cases from a variety of law enforcement agencies, and then they review the evidence. If they decide not to pursue the prosecution, it just goes away. It never appears as a case. The same review process occurs in Astoria Municipal Court. If they decide not to pursue the case, then it's dismissed, and it tracks as a dismissed DUII case. That's the difference. So it's really kind of out of balance. It's like apples and oranges, unless you understand the way the system works. So I can tell you, when we have looked at it in that light, the DUII conviction rate is on par with the circuit court. But finally, I have to disagree with what one of the previous speakers was mentioning and has been mentioned a couple of times. I believe that having the municipal court as a layer of protection for the accused citizen to make an appeal is a constitutional right of the state of Oregon. A municipality has the right to decide what kind of cases they hear within their municipal borders. If it happens to be a misdemeanor DUII case and that person is convicted, then that citizen has the right to appeal to circuit court. I believe that that's a protection in a way. A second bite of the apple is not a bad thing where I'm coming from, because where I come from, I'm not condoning DUII, but I am advocating for the rights of the citizen to the appeal process. So thank you for your time. And on behalf of the citizens of the state of Oregon, please oppose this bill.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Just a quick question, sir. What do you expect if this bill were to pass? What would be the worst thing that you could imagine happening?
What would be the worst thing? I could imagine that throughout the state, citizens that were accused and had formerly had the ability to have their case heard in municipal court would no longer have that right.
Follow up.
So,
and what's the worst thing about that then?
That's just one less layer that the citizen has to go through the judicial process.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffer.
I think there's a local squabble here that has generated a statutory question, if I'm reading all this right. And I don't know the history and the statistics of this court or that court, but I still haven't heard why. I mean, the way I understand it, from what the brief knowledge I have, is that the district attorney doesn't come down and ask for every single case in municipal court. It wouldn't be asked every time. I still haven't heard a reasoning why it is such a bad thing for the district attorney to have the ability, when he or she chooses, to pull a specific case that, you know, for whatever reason, why that's a bad thing. And I find it interesting that it's just narrowed to this one community. I mean, my door isn't being knocked down by cities and municipal courts saying, don't do this. It just seems to be this one narrow area. But why is it a bad thing for this district attorney to have the ability to remove these cases? I understand your layer of appeal, but that's not what the argument I'm hearing is. The argument is we don't want the district attorney to have the ability to do that. So can you help me here? Clearly I need
help. Well, I think you'll hear some other testimony from the League of Oregon Cities and some other people, but I think that it's a very important, that layer of appeal should not be overlooked as just a trifle. That's a very important thing.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of want to spin off a little bit with what Representative Tomei was asking. First of all, I need to ask a question of you. Have you both seen the opinion then that came from the Department of Justice?
Yes, I just saw it last night.
Okay, so I understand that you're opposed to this bill and that you don't think it's necessary. How then do you interpret what the Department of Justice has written in their opinion? Because to me it appears that clearly they have the district attorney has the authority to do this.
May I answer then?
Absolutely.
Yes. Chair Barker and Chair Krieger is here. The district attorney has said that without this legislation, he has that ability now. And I think what the Attorney General's opinion, and I'm certainly not an attorney, I think what the Attorney General's opinion said that they would defend him if it came to a trial. I'm not sure that that means that they agree with him because that's their obligation to defend him.
Well, Mr. Chair, I disagree with that interpretation right there, but I think it's pretty clear what the Attorney General's opinion was on that. So,
Representative Hicks.
Well, thank you, Mr. Kutcher. And gentlemen, you're on the City Council for Astoria.
Yes.
Can you tell us, articulate whether the municipal court, in terms of its fiscal significance on the city budget, is it a gain? Is it a loss? Does the city budget as a whole have to pay an extra expense for municipal court? Is it a wash? Is it a little bit of a gain? What's the fiscal implications of it?
Representative Hicks, well, Chair Baker, Representative Hicks, it's not a huge thing. It's not a big monetary issue with us. I think that most of this has become quite personal over the last 10 years because we have, without the ability to defend ourselves, been accused of awful things, which absolutely are not true, and so we're looking for our voice.
Thank you. In Multnomah County, if you get a citation, you go to circuit court. There is no municipal court that handle drunk driving. And so where's the balance there? I mean, I know the two bites at the apple seems a little specious to me as well. I don't know why you'd get a practice trial. And I know why, because it's not a court of record, is why you were able to do that. But that just, I mean, why is that better?
I believe we are a court of record, Chairman Barker.
You are a court of record?
Yes.
Astoria?
We record all of our proceedings in their entirety. However, that does not make us a court of record.
Okay. And where, so you don't, you're not a court of record then?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And I'll go back to Representative Olson's. On the Attorney General's Chief Deputy Mary Williams' opinion looks really strong to me. And I will just tell you, I mean, we'll listen to the other testimony, but Chief Justice Brewer he's Chief of the Court of Appeals, has told us when we structure laws, one of the main things we have to do, or one of the main things that's helpful to the court, if there's a question about what something means, we should put it in English into the law to make it clear. And it would, so that would, I mean, it would seem at this point that what we might need to do is put her opinion into pass this law so that it is very clear where we stand on that. Anybody else have anything? Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. Scott Winkle. Blair Henningsgaard and Paul Benoit. Please. And again, you can speak in any order. Please identify yourself for the record, and please, we have a lot more to go today. Appreciate if you could summarize as much as you can. Thank you.
Co-Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities, and I'm appearing in opposition to House Bill 3025. the league would contend that this legislation is not needed. Previous legislatures did envision a scenario where it might be necessary for the administration of justice for a municipal court to cease the prosecution of criminal matters. And I would draw your council's attention to ORS 221339 sub 5, which grants the municipal court the authority to try certain cases that are triable within their jurisdiction, but subjected that authority to the additional power of the Attorney General. It is my understanding from consultation from Judge Limhouse, who is sort of the dean of the municipal court world, and who I believe some of members of this committee may be acquainted with, that all that need take place at this point is for a state officer, which a district attorney is, to petition the Attorney General for relief. Additionally, if a municipal court is not following the strictures of the structure of the statute, there is an injunctive relief through the courts. In the case of Astoria, it does not appear that the remedies that already exist within the statute have been exhausted. I would also respond to Representative Hicks' question in regards to the cost. No municipal court's making money on DUI cases or criminal cases. They're doing that at a cost. In point of fact, there are some cities in this state who are going to considerable expense for the administration of justice, and we'd have a rather spectacular example of a city entering into the field of corrections. Springfield now operates a 100-bed jail at expense to itself. Florence, Cottage Grove also are sentencing people in their municipal courts. And to Representative Kamei's point, and the worst thing that could happen, my recollection from 2007 when the legislation was introduced that would require municipal courts to become courts of record if they wished to hear criminal matters, the city attorney and the city prosecutor in Pendleton, who I don't think anybody would have a question with the manner in which he's prosecuted his cases, told me that if that were the case in the city of Pendleton, it would the existing circuit court caseload at the time, a DUI would wait 8 months to go to trial. To extend that time out is justice delayed. You have a time before this person is sentenced, before they're going into their diversion, before they're getting their treatment. That's the worst thing that could happen in our estimation. With that, I will turn it over to, as Representative Schaffler would call them, these nice people from City of Astoria.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Co-Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Blair Henningsgaard. I practice law in Astoria. I'm also, since January this year, the Astoria City Attorney, and in that capacity serve as the city prosecutor. I'm here to appear in opposition to House Bill 3025. I've been a member of the bar since 1978, and although I maintain primarily a civil practice, I have worked as both a criminal prosecutor and a criminal defender in state and municipal courts. Also served one term as a county commissioner and 9 years on the Astoria City Council before my appointment. We all agree, I think, as to the importance of eliminating impaired drivers from our roadways. But this bill, 3025, will not make our roadways safer and will cost both the city and the state of Oregon money. I have presented you with 18 pages of materials. Within that packet, the first set of materials was intended to address some questions that were raised by the district attorney about the prosecution practices in the Astoria Municipal Court. He employed a clerk to make an investigation, and according to the district attorney, spent over 200 hours researching the Astoria Municipal Court. He presented a report to the city. In October of this year, the City Council conducted a hearing that lasted over 5 hours, took testimony of every individual that was interested in addressing that report, and I have presented you with the Mayor Willis Van Dusen's statement that he made after that hearing, and the resolution of the city, the unanimous resolution of the City Council that addressed each one of the cases that Mr. Marquis thought was a problem. I think there was 14 or 18 cases that he mentioned. There were two in the last 9 years that had caused a problem in the city of Astoria that were acknowledged as a problem. Both of those cases resulted in convictions for DUII. So those things are there for your review. Now, to address Ms. Rasmussen's concern about municipal court, in the past 4 years, I would say, we've made a number of changes in municipal court. Every case, every hearing, every matter in municipal court is digitally recorded, and that record is maintained. Our municipal court judge is and always has been, as long as I know, a member of the Oregon State Bar. We have a very experienced municipal court judge that serves right now. He's also a criminal defense attorney, but in my 3 months observing him practice, find him to be a very good judge. I have some experience in that, as my wife is also a circuit court judge in Astoria. But in any case, every case is recorded. We have a computerized record-keeping system. All of the records of the Astoria Municipal Court are retrievable by computer. Commissioner Roscoe mentioned the citation process that we use. We use a computerized citation process, so when the officer in the field writes a ticket, that charge is filed automatically with the Astoria Municipal Court in their computer system digitally. I think we have a very efficient system, and I have found during my 9 years on the City Council in my 3 months now as a city prosecutor, no hint of wrongdoing in that court. The district attorney has indicated during his testimony and previously that the Astoria Police Department favors removal of these cases. I have included in my packet some comments that Mr. Marquis made to the DUII committee earlier this year. Our chief of police's response to those comments and a copy of the policy that the Astoria Police Department uses in citing cases. As you may or may not know, the decision as to where to cite the cases does not come from the Astoria City Council, but it comes from the Astoria Police Department. The Astoria Police Department's policy is to cite driving under the influence, a certain number of driving under the influence cases that arise in the city of Astoria into Astoria Municipal Court. That policy, which addresses also all citations from the city of Astoria, is included in your packet, and you can see the process that's used in the city of Astoria for citing cases. Domestic assault cases are cited into circuit court in addressing some of the concerns that have been raised here. But you can see that entire policy. You'll also see the second page of that policy, or the last page of that policy, addresses two more kinds of DUI cases that are now being sent to Clatsop County Circuit Court by the Astoria Police Department. That includes cases involving drug recognition experts and any case where an individual has two or more citations in the state of Oregon, or convictions in the state of Oregon for driving under the influence of intoxicants. Those go by policy now to Astoria, to the circuit court. In answer to some of the questions, what is wrong with allowing the district attorney to pick and choose which cases he gets to go to circuit court? I don't believe that would be possible. That used to be the policy in the state of Oregon that a police officer could pick and choose which cases he wishes to prosecute in municipal court or in circuit court. The Court of Appeals, and I believe in the Oregon Supreme Court, in a case out of Klamath Falls, said that that's a denial of due process. So in this situation, if the district attorney wanted, and that's because there's a different process in both courts. There's a trial de novo that's allowed in municipal court and not one that's allowed in circuit court. So you have to have a policy, and that's why the Astoria Police Department has a policy of citing of which cases, which DUI cases go where. And so I don't believe that it would be constitutionally permissible for a district attorney to say, okay, I want to prosecute this one because I don't like that person or because I think it's particularly egregious. The decision to prosecute in one particular court or another has to be done by an adopted policy and not on an ad hoc basis. The district attorney has provided you with a letter and has asserted many times that he also has the authority today to do these prosecutions. I don't particularly agree with that. I had asked the Attorney General's office to provide me with that opinion, and I've given you an email back and forth. Matter of fact, I paid for a records request with the Attorney General's office. The Attorney General's office cited attorney-client privilege, and I asked that they a district attorney would waive that privilege so I could see the communications that went back and forth. Mr. Marquis declined me the opportunity to see the communications that went back and forth between the Attorney General's office and his office. But on the same day that he made that declined, that letter of March 28th showed up. And to answer Representative Olson's question, I agree with the analysis of Mr. Warr. What the letter says is that we will defend you. That is the Attorney General's responsibility, to provide a defense if the district attorney is sued in a court of law. They're required to provide that defense. That's all that letter is saying, and it says we will make that argument for you. It does not say that they will prosecute that case. So if you read the letter, and perhaps you have to read it like a lawyer, the way I interpret it, it says the Attorney General's office will agree to do what it's supposed to do, and that is provide a defense to the district attorney in the event of litigation. Some suggestion has been made that...
if you could summarize, since we are...
Okay.
Please.
There are 140 municipal courts in the state of Oregon. And I've given you a list of those courts. These municipal courts are funded with revenues that are completely outside the state court system. These courts save the state money and continue to save the state money. Allowing the district attorney to take the cases, I can't tell you what will happen statewide, but I can tell you what will likely happen in Astoria. If the district attorney takes the cases from the DUI cases from the Astoria docket, we will probably send all of our misdemeanor cases to the state court system. Nobody has asked our state our court administrator to do a financial analysis of that, but I can tell you that I've provided you with the listing, the cases, the DUI cases that were handled in the last 2 years in Australian Municipal Court. Most of that work on those cases is done by court staff. Our court staff in Clatsop County are down 1.5 positions. They're taking furloughs, which means that they have to take a day off, about one day a month, and they're currently overworked. Nobody has asked the state court administrators to make an opinion as to what would happen statewide if these cases all then go to the state court system. And our court administrator, who I talked to earlier this week, doesn't know if they could handle them or not. I think this deal would have significant effect statewide, and it would cost the state court system money. It would cost the city of Astoria money, because we currently make a small amount on our system. If we didn't believe that our municipal court system provided a service, we would shut it down. I can tell you that it does provide a service, and it's an important service to the city.
I'd like to ask you, so if I have a drunk driving ticket from 8 years ago in Montana, are you going to know that at municipal court?
If you have one 8 years ago in Montana, there's a possibility maybe not. I do have access to nationwide reporting services that do report criminally, but it's not as good as the district attorney system is.
Okay, thank you. Representative Garrett, please.
Thank you. Why would it be the policy of the city police to refer, I think you said, a certain percentage of cases to the municipal court?
Not a percentage, but by type. So if it's a case that is going to be a felony, for example, it would go to circuit court. If it's a case that involves a drug recognition expert, it goes to circuit court. If it's a case where the person has had two DUI convictions in the state of Oregon in the last 10 years, goes to circuit court. That's a matter of policy. So the officer in the field has no discretion on that.
And what goes to municipal court then?
First-time offenders or second-time offenders that are arrested in the city of Astoria.
And, see. You said the judge is the public, I understand. You didn't say that. You said he's a defense attorney, which is not abnormal at all for municipal judges, although usually they have a small private practice. Is it the case that he is the public defender?
He has a contract with the public defender's office to take a percentage of the cases in Clatsop County.
And is that his primary job as public defender then?
I couldn't speak to that. I couldn't speak to that.
Thank you very much. Please.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, members of the committee. My name is Paul Benoit. I'm the city manager of the city of Astoria. I've been an employee of the city for 22 years. I've been city manager for the past 5 years. In recent testimony before the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUIs, it was stated that one of the reasons this bill may seem odd is that it is not going to affect very many places, if any places, directly, other than Astoria. Those comments were made by District Attorney Josh Marquis. The bill's author drafted a statewide bill that, in his own words, is very specifically targeted to Astoria, which is why you see a lot of Astorians here today. I mean, that may seem unusual, but I think it was mentioned by a member of the committee. It has gotten personal. I mean, Ms. Marquis has made some, over the years, hurtful statements about the community, harmful statements about the community, and largely unsupported statements about our court. And that's why we're here on this bill today. Over the 22 years that I've been with the city and I've observed the court, we've had seven different judges in our municipal court. Three of them are the three current circuit court judges in Clatsop County. They include Judge Paula Brownhill, Judge Phil Nelson, and Judge Cindy Matthias. Judge Nelson and Brownhill were full-time municipal court. I mean, they served full-time in our court. Judge Matthias served as a judge pro tem. So we've always had very good judges who have advanced in their careers. I can tell you, because I've been an observer of the court, that it runs efficiently, it runs honestly, it provides a valuable service to the community. In addition to the honorable judges that I've mentioned, I worked with three police chiefs over the years. Chief Rob Dupree, he's a former police chief from Springfield, Oregon. Chief Ron Louie, he's a retired police chief. After he left the story, he was chief for about 18 years in Hillsborough. And then Chief Pete Curzon, our current chief, who was a former captain from Riverside, California. Good police chiefs with great backgrounds. I maintain contact, obviously, with the current chief, but also the two former chiefs, and I can tell you that each not only has great integrity, but they've been very supportive of court operations. I talk to them about this now and then. I've never heard an assertion or a hint of concern about corruption from a chief of police or any city employee in my 22 years with the city. I'd like to say, I mean, that our court, and my guess is most municipal courts, serve their communities very well, and I'll give you a couple of examples.
We're really scratched for time.
Well, we added night court. It's difficult for our citizens often to access court. They work. We added night court. We also coordinate with our Astoria Police Department's work schedule. So if we have a hearing, they need to be at court appearance. We try to work it when they're on duty. That doesn't interfere with their vacation time, and it saves the city overtime. From a financial perspective, I'll just make this statement and wrap it up, because it was raised, I think, by Representative Wishnut. I can't see that name in my glasses. our court runs a little bit better than break even. I'm going to say on average we might make our court today, our expense or budget is about $173,000 to operate the court. Most of them are fixed. We have a full-time court clerk. We have the judge. We probably, in the last year, took in about $190,000 in revenue. We run it to break even. We run it as a service. It's not our police department has never, in my experience, ever written tickets with an idea of filling city coffers. We have never operated the court with an idea of generating revenue for the city. It's a service to citizens.
Thank you very much. I don't mean to cut you short, but I really appreciate you coming all the way from Astoria, but we are kind of jammed for time. We have several more bills to go today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The last three on the list are Willis Van Duren, Karen Mellon, and Arlene Lemire. And again, as you heard me say, we're really getting jammed for time. I appreciate you. To summarize, we want you to be able to tell us what you need to tell us. So thank you.
Good afternoon. I am Willis Van Duzen. I am the mayor of Astoria, and I do appreciate you letting us testify today. I will be brief, but the first item I want to mention is you should know a little bit about me. I have been arrested three times for DUI. I was arrested once in the 80s, in the 90s, in 2006. It took me a while to get it, that I am one of those people that cannot drink alcohol. I have been through rehab. I am in recovery right now. I'm very proud of my progress. It's an ongoing work. I am still working very hard with the post-care that was recommended for me. And so I hope that the fact that I'm a recovering alcoholic, you will not discount my comments. So I am here also hoping that you will, asking you to vote in opposition of this bill. The way this came about through the City Council was we were approached by the District Attorney's Office and we were told that some of our court procedures needed improvement. We agreed and we did that. We record all of our proceedings now. We have electronic ticketing and the court has been completely computerized. Then the District Attorney approached the City of Astoria and said, well, we can save the city some money. And it's a very important issue that the money was brought, the money issue was initiated from the District Attorney's Office. So we said, okay. We were very open to his suggestions and took them very seriously. We asked the city finance director, city manager to look into that. Had he came back and said, we can save some money, I think there's a very good chance that we would have agreed with the District Attorney's proposal. But it did not, as Mr. Benoit went on. Mr. Benoit has just explained. Then the district attorney came to the city and said, no, there's a lot of mishandled cases. There are cases that are disappearing. There's people with favoritism. We said, really? We listened very carefully with great concern. The district attorney spent several hundred hours and gave a proposal, brought it to the city council, and only there were two cases in 9 years, and there were over 10 cases that were mistakes. One individual was arrested in Seaside. One individual was arrested for shoplifting candy bars, and in the district attorney's report, it said he had been had a DUI. So we have not had a good reason. Every reason that was brought to us was not a good reason. It has become very personal. And my last comment is the attorney general. Opinion came out 2 days ago. This has been going on for a long, long time. And I looked at the letter in the car on the way down here, and I'd hope you'd understand. None of us have a chance to really understand what that letter means.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
And I'm glad to answer any questions about my personal issues or the city. Thank you.
I read about them in the paper.
I'm sure you did.
You said that. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Barker and Co-Chair Krieger and members of the committee. I'm Arlene Lemire. I'm on the Astoria City Council. I've lived in Astoria now 13 years and during that time have been heavily involved in the community. And it's a community that I am very, very proud to represent. I'm not going to say very much because much of what I was going to say has already been said.
Well, thank you.
We know that municipal court is not perfect, and we thank Mr. Marquis for bringing the problems to the attention of the City Council. We've done things about them. As the Mayor said, we are now taping all proceedings, and we've also offered to transfer the more serious DUI cases to circuit court. The two things that I would say are an advantage to the municipal court are that in municipal court, municipal court is much more flexible in terms of its scheduling so that they can schedule hearings during the time that police officers are on duty. The circuit court, on the other hand, just schedules all their hearings and officers are expected to appear, and this results oftentimes in overtime pay. So that is a problem. Also, we were told by one of our circuit court judges in Clatsop County that they have a very full load, and if they were to take any more of the DUI cases, it would greatly add to their burden and the length of time before people's cases could be heard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please.
My name is Karen Malin, and I live in Astoria. I was I first resided there in 1951, so it is my hometown, though I wasn't born there. I'm the most recently elected member of Astoria City Council. I was recruited by District Attorney Josh Marquis to run for this position. It was not even on a blip on my screen. He convinced me to run. And when I finally agreed, I had been a member of the Women's Political Caucus for many, many years, very active in getting women elected to office, and I thought, okay, my number's come up, it's my turn. District Attorney Josh Marquis came over to my house. He coached me on all of the issues that he had about the municipal court. He supported my campaign financially. I believe that his expectations were that I would take on the city council and make sure that he got his wishes met. However, the letter that I've written to you is to the committee that he reported on to previously. I did not know that you were not the same committee. I read the transcript of his report and found that his report about me was a complete fabrication. Presented his report in December to the city council about the municipal court, it was a labyrinth it was undecipherable to me. So I know nothing more than I knew at the time. I thank you for your time.
Thank you
and
very
attention.
Much for your testimony. Yes. And I'm a friend of Bill Dovey's as well. So.
Oh, very good.
Hey, thank you very much for testimony.
September 4th.
Yeah. Mine's January 1st. But
right. That's very good. Thank you very much.
Representative Witt, were you here to testify?
Mr. Chairman.
I apologize. I didn't realize you were
here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was not here for the purpose of testimony. I quite frankly am here trying to understand why it is that when our state has a public policy that we have municipal courts and that under certain circumstances it may be entirely appropriate to have cases adjudicated in municipal court, why we as a state legislature are now trying to in some way govern the docket in Astoria Municipal Court. And I heard testimony earlier today that this is all about who has the power and who has the decision making. I find that disturbing, Mr. Chairman. I find that very disturbing. And I think that's suggestive of an underlying problem. I would just add that this municipal court is in my district. And I have not heard very much about this up until today. So I'm very puzzled why this piece of legislation has come forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Representative. We appreciate your testimony. Close the public hearing on, if I can find my numbers here, House Bill 3025. And open a public hearing on House Bill 3065.
And co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 3065 raises the crime of official misconduct in the first degree to a Class C felony and directs the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission to classify that crime as a Level 8 on the sentencing guidelines if the offense results in a financial gain of $10,000 or more or constitutes a felony person crime, otherwise a Level 6, raises the crime of official misconduct in the second degree to a Class A misdemeanor.
Thank you. Please, Mr. Attorney General. Josh Marquis and Doug Harkle will come up as well, so we're going to have to keep things flowing here. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Kroger. I'm the Attorney General of Oregon, and I'm here to urge passage of the bill in its -1 form, which the committee received today. I apologize about the the late nature of the amendments, but the original bill didn't truly capture what we were trying to do, and the dash one does. Investigating and prosecuting official misconduct and public corruption is a basic statutory duty of the Oregon Department of Justice. It is the single biggest caseload we have in our criminal justice division. We've seen an increase of over 400% in the last 2 years of the number of official misconduct and public corruption cases that have been referred to us by sheriffs, district attorneys, and chiefs of police. In our investigation and prosecution of those cases, one of the things that we have run up against is a basic problem with our statutes. The official misconduct statute, which is our basic public corruption statute, is only a misdemeanor, no matter how serious the official misconduct is. And we believe that some official misconduct is so serious it should be punishable with a felony offense. The bill makes official misconduct a felony in basically in two cases, and these two cases are analytically independent. You could pass the bill with one or both, or obviously neither, but they're not linked. So one of them is to make it a felony if a public official commits official misconduct and as a result has a financial gain to the public servant of $10,000 or more. This is designed for a case where someone either takes a bribe of $10,000 or more, embezzles $10,000 or more, does some kind of conduct that violates their official duties and gains $10,000 or more. Part of what we're trying to do here is make sure that we have a more powerful response when we have those very rare but very serious cases. Right now, the reality is that we would likely refer any case of that size to the U.S. Department of Justice for prosecution at the federal level because our statutes don't give us as much firepower as we would like. The second area where this modifies the law is that it would make it a felony if a public official committed a misdemeanor involving violence or harassment or a person felony in the course of their official duties. And I will be really clear. I think the place where this is most likely to occur is in either a law enforcement or a corrections setting where a public official commits some kind of assault in their official duty. And the question is, what should be the result of that? I personally believe that if there is a assault committed by a public official, whether it's in a correction setting or some other setting on an individual, that the resulting official misconduct should not be treated as a minor offense, but should be treated as a felony. Reasonable people could differ on that. It's purely a question of policy about what the right statutory response is. But I believe in cases, no matter whether the underlying assault is a misdemeanor or not, the official misconduct should be a felony, because I believe when you have a public official committing an assault or a crime of violence in the official line of duty, that's a very serious violation of the public trust and should be treated accordingly. I know time is of the essence. I'll be happy to answer any questions when the panel is through testifying. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Marquis.
Thank you. My name is Josh Marquis. I'm the District Attorney of Clatsop County. I won't go through what you've heard what I did. One of the reasons I'm here is my predecessor was arrested, indicted, convicted, jailed, and disbarred in that order. The line is that people's expectations were low, and hopefully I've been able to exceed them. The problem is I also represent, as I told you, Oregon on the National DA's Association, and I was talking just recently to a bunch of prosecutors, and they said, what happens with official misconduct for primarily law enforcement officers? I mean, that's really what this is aimed at, district attorneys, frankly, and probably cops. And when I told them it was a misdemeanor, they were kind of astounded. As some of you know, because of something actually that happened in this chamber or the next one, actually the Senate, a number of years ago, conviction of a felony is sufficient to remove someone from office. Conviction of a misdemeanor is not. And what we're talking about here is the bar is still fairly high. We would have to prove, or the Attorney General would have to prove, not only that they committed official misconduct, but that they committed a person crime in the course of that job. So sort of it's a double bar. But the idea that it is functionally equivalent to stealing something that's worth $75 or $100, which is what a Class A misdemeanor is, I just don't think is adequate. And I also say that, as I said in my previous testimony, that I've special prosecuted probably a half a dozen official misconduct cases around the state, and not all of them would qualify for this, but some of them would.
Thank you. Mr. Harkleroad, please.
Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Harkleroad. I'm the retired Lane County District Attorney, and I represent the Oregon Anti-Crime Alliance. We support House Bill 3065, the -1 amendments, and let me tell you why. Long time ago, when I was a deputy district attorney, there was a county commissioner in Lane County who decided to help a real estate broker in a complex land swap worth many hundreds of thousands of dollars. The county commissioner got a Rolex watch for that. He got a trip to Las Vegas with his wife and a trip to Hawaii, all paid for by the real estate broker. We tried that case to a judge, myself and one other lawyer, for 6 weeks. We also had a perjury count on it because he lied in grand jury. He was convicted of both. We had a discovery issue on appeal, and ultimately it came back, and I settled that case. Remember, we had 6 weeks of trial. I settled that case for the Class A misdemeanor of official misconduct because that's all we had. That was not enough for the behavior of that elected official. And this bill would reach that particular county commissioner under the $10,000 or more provision. Fast forwarding, I have dealt with police officers using physical force over the 24 years as district attorney, and all the experienced law enforcement people in this room know that there is a range of reasonableness on the force that's to be used, and prosecutors have an obligation to look at that very closely. And many of those cases are resolvable in some way. The most serious thing that really happens to that officer is probably that he loses his job and he lost his career. But there are a few times when it should be a felony when the officer does something so bad, and this bill carefully slices that out. And there's one over in the Oregon State Penitentiary right now where our office prosecuted him for a whole bunch of sex crimes where he used his official position to get sex from women. And so the official misconduct realistically didn't make a lot of difference there, but it should have been a felony, not a misdemeanor. And this is a pretty carefully crafted bill, so we support it. That's all I have.
Any questions real quick? Representative Garrett.
Thank you. support the bill. I just wanted to ask a question. We have some testimony from the city of Eugene raising concerns about the vagueness of the definition of the crime, and they're not specific, but I suppose it might relate to the phrase, a duty that's clearly inherent in the nature of the office. And I just wonder, has there been any issue with that in the case law about how that is interpreted? Is there anything we should be... Do you understand the question?
I do. Chair Barker, Representative Garrett, we've seen no problems litigating. I don't know if Doug, with his greater experience, has experienced a case where you've litigated that.
Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, members of the committee, I've actually litigated that issue out of that official misconduct case with the county commissioner. It's been through the Court of Appeals, and they have said that clearly inherent in the nature of his office is constitutional. I actually found a case, and I think it was out of Colorado, but don't hold me to that. It was back in the Midwest somewhere where it described how that was perfectly clear and no problem.
Okay.
So I understand your concern. I had that, too, at one point.
Not mine. Somebody else.
Representative Nolan.
I'm sorry. I should probably know this, but I'm sure that these gentlemen or perhaps our own counsel can tell me what the penalty for Category 6 crimes is.
Chair Barker, Representative Nolan, I believe it's a presumptive 16 to 18 month sentence with the possibility of a downward departure.
Am I wrong?
Yeah. I'll just again.
I'm trying to a level 6, depending on the person's criminal history, starts off with no prison.
Eight.
Right.
It would be
until you had a person crime. In other words, two or three property crimes, you'd still get probation. You'd have to have a pretty serious record before you'd start getting presumptive prison. If you're familiar with the grid, the way it works.
A quick follow-up. Is there an inherent fine? Is there a minimum fine associated with that, or is it just incarceration?
Unless there's something special, and it's the fine is aligned with whatever C felony is, $150,000 or something. Okay. For a misdemeanor, it's substantially
thanks
less.
For your
help. Hey, thank you. Representative Krieger, you have a question?
Well, I just wondered that in the case of elected officials who make a salary, maybe we should base the fine on their salary.
I wouldn't do much for legislators.
Yeah. That's the idea.
Yeah. So you'd beat Robin and get off for a couple bucks. Representative Wisnant, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see your name on this bill, and I support as much punishment for elected officials doing things like this as possible. But I cannot support this bill if it doesn't address PERS benefits. Doug talked about the fact that you lose your job, but you don't lose your PERS benefits. And it doesn't take long for some of our officials to make up the money that you're charging them here.
Thank you. You know, Representative Witt said to that issue, we talked about that in a prior year. My concern, if you go there, you could be affecting the wife and the children of that person, their ability to even have an education or live in a house, so to speak. I want to get at the person who committed that crime without trying to get to the point where you could really hurt the family members who maybe had nothing to do with it.
Thank you, Representative Hicks.
For the panel, there's been testimony about the bill, including person misdemeanors. I do see those included. Harassment is defined in ORS 166065. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's not classified by Criminal Justice Commission as a person misdemeanor. It's kind of it's a B misdemeanor of offensive physical contact. And I do have a concern that persons who are in uniformed roles, police officers, corrections officers, oftentimes get into situations that could involve objectively offensive physical contact. And so that's an unintended consequence of the bill as I see it currently drafted for the panel's contemplation.
Well, there is a harassment, a version of harassment that is a Class A misdemeanor when there's a sexual component to it. Doesn't actually require it. And, of course, you're a prosecutor, and you know that the mere fact that there's offensive physical contact isn't enough, and every inmate in the world would claim every time a corrections officer has laid hands on him, hey, that was offensive. I think it would have to be something more than that. As you know, I'm sure you do domestic violence cases. Sometimes you can't prove assault but you can prove harassment, and I think that was, I'm not participated in drafting the bill, but I'm assuming that's what they're trying to get at.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hicks, the goal of adding harassment there was to have the potential where you would have effectively an assault case where you're not doing physical damage, and thus the underlying predicate would be harassment. I guess I'm not worried about unintended consequences here because these are always going to involve prosecutorial discretion. Obviously, prosecutors are going to be very careful before they charge anyone in law enforcement with official misconduct based on an arrest scenario or a correction scenario where they're trying to maintain discipline or order in a correctional facility.
Okay, thank you very much. I have one more person to testify on this bill. Mr. Baldwin, please. And I'll remind you, too, we're really jammed for time. So
okay, thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, members of the House. Honorable members of the House of Representatives, for the citizens of Oregon, Co-Chairman Gilman, I believe.
Okay,
we'll bypass that. Okay. In harmony with ORS 162465, my name is Raymond Baldwin. My true interest is to represent the 9,700 children in DHS custody, the innocent that cannot speak for themselves, and the tens of thousands of parents whose homes are broken by DHS and CPS.
This is about official misconduct.
Yes, HB 3065.
Okay.
Putting some teeth into the bill will be greatly appreciated.
Okay.
HB 3065 is but a small step in the right direction. It is not a complete solution. It should be amended to include expulsion of those who violate the law from future employment in both public and private sector from those areas. And because they are public servants, jail time should be mandatory. Investigational processes are blocked and legislature is hampered in their ability to deliberate in the best interest of the people due to the lack of the facts and the truth. For this reason, I also strongly urge that you support Senate Bill 288 and 187 to attempt to block this, attempt to I'm sorry, excuse
me.
I'm a little overcome with the fact that I've had to deal with illegal procedures in Clackamas County. I've had to deal with my children taken without a proper investigation. My children have been interrogated at school without me present and misquoted. And through their misquotes, then they develop a case. They have no case, there is no case, but they continue to hold my children. They have not given me a hearing in 130 days. And so I think that this bill, 3065, is very important. I would only ask that you would increase the penalties and to, since time is short, I would implore us to remember that the study done for the legislature by the University of Minnesota that found two-thirds of the children never should have been taken by CPS. Fixing the black hole alone will save $180 million in state budget for foster care alone, not to mention the $100 trillion of misery dished out by the agency, who is at the center of child exploitation and abuse. The solution, CPS and DHS, has become the problem. Thank you for allowing me to represent the innocent children and parents who cannot represent themselves. HB 3065 is a bill that will help stop the breeding of anarchy and the violations of our civil and constitutional rights. Thank you very much.
Mr. Baldwin?
Yes, sir.
We're going to have to get on, but there are a couple members on this committee that have been involved in dependency for several years. If you would take time to look my name up and my phone number and call me, we will start you down the track.
Yes, sir. And I want to report to this committee that I have compiled information regarding all of this, and I would really like to work with the committees and your workshops to bring reciprocity to the system. Thank you.
Contract Representative,
Mr. Very briefly, I would also like the study that was cited to be emailed to the committee administrator. I'd like to look at that study.
You could have that study spoke of emailed to Mr. Knott. He's our administrator, and he'll get it to the rest of us.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 3065. Open a work session on House Bill 2940. Representative Gelser, please.
And co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2940 increases the crime of strangulation to a maximum of 5 years imprisonment or $125,000 or both. It'll be classified as a crime category 8 if the defendant has a previous conviction for strangulation, otherwise as a crime category 4. This is amended. The amendment is to make this a crime of mandatory arrest. There is no projected revenue impact. A fiscal impact statement has been issued, and I believe Representative Gelser will speak to it.
Okay, we're ready.
Yes, please.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. Thanks for having me back, and thank you for working this very important bill to protect Oregonians. The
She's not certain.
Yeah. Sarah Gelser. I am Representative Sarah Gelser from Corvallis, House District 16. Wanted to let you know we did just get this fiscal impact statement back. We are working with the Attorney General's office to get more detailed information about the sentencing practices of the district attorneys, and we will have that available for the subcommittee when it gets to you. And
Representative, it's an honor to be on this bill with you. I just want to publicly thank you for your tireless efforts to help protect the most vulnerable people of our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative.
And I'll try to get a name tag, and if you work on it, maybe you get it memorized before the next time. Thank you. We have, I'd like to, Ms.
bill's ready to go, but it needs to go.
I think we need to adopt the dash one.
Oh, we do need it. Okay, yeah. We have not adopted the dash one.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Krieger.
I move that we adopt the dash one amendments into 2940.
Representative Krieger moves the dash ones in the House Bill 2940. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, may I make the motion to?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move we move House Bill 2940 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
To Ways and Means.
To Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2940 to Ways.
To Ways and Means.
To Ways and Means, okay. With a due pass to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative
Nolan?
Yes. Representative
Alden?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
You're darn straight, yes.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative
Wong? Aye. Representative Woodman?
Aye.
Co-Vice
Chair
Hicks?
Aye.
Co-Vice
Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye.
Carries. Next work session will open. We're going to hold over House Bill 2142. Open a reconsideration for work session on House Bill 3153.
And co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 3153 was already the subject of a 10-0 vote. This happened on 324. This pertains to the extension of the definition of peace officer and police officer to cover reserve officers. The only issue here is that the fiscal that came back was for the intro version, not for the dash one. They asked that it be returned to us. There is no difference between the fiscal impact of the intro and dash one, so nothing has changed, but we have to revote.
Open the work session on House Bill 3153.
Is this an example of efficiency of government?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I move that we do what Aaron Knott said we're supposed to do.
Representative Garrett moves House Bill 3153 as corrected with the new fiscal to the floor to do pass. Any?
No testimony?
No. Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Bolton?
Aye.
Representative
Shoffler? Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Wong?
Aye.
Representative
Whitman?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries, and I'll still be the carrier. Open a work session, House Bill 2141. Close the work session on House Bill 2141. Any further business coming before the committee today?
Negative.
Adjourned.